listening to the Tune In Talk Podcast, Episode 21, Interview with Margaret Dean. Hello and welcome to Fanboy Nation's Tune In Talk Podcast, your rendezvous for animation interviews. I am your host, Whitney Grayson. After that short hiatus in the middle of October, I am back and raring to bring you the best stories straight from the animation industry. One of the things you have probably noticed about Tune In Talk is a lot of my guests are men. And I started noticing this when I first started the show a couple years ago, when it was back known as Animation Interviews over with the Rotoscopers. And I love speaking with my male guests, but I love having people of different genders and ethnicities on the show, primarily because it keeps things more interesting for me as the interviewer, also for you, the listeners, because people of different backgrounds and, you know, different genders have different observations of the world. And that way, if I get a variety of different diverse people on the show, it offers you different perspectives on how the animation industry works. I mean, a woman's observation of the animation industry is probably going to be a lot different from a man's observation on the animation industry. Of course, there's going to be similarities and crossovers and things, but as you know, if you are a man or if you are a woman, one of the oldest arguments in the entire world is how the other person thinks. It goes back even to Greek mythology, and there are even some myths based on it. But this isn't a legend of mythology and has more to do with the current state of the animation industry. Before I get into a further explanation of my plans for the schedule of November, I need to make a declaration. I know, right? I have never made a declaration before on the show, to my recollection. But I officially declare November the Ladies of Animation Month. I added my own echo in there for emphasis. One of the disparaging facts I have noticed by studying the animation industry for over 20 years is the ratio of men to women working in it. Now, at the inception of the animation industry, this is to be expected because it was women's role to stay at home and raise a family and take care of it and be homemakers and, you know, the guardians of the hearth. That's just how things were. And then we have the women's movement and stuff like this. But even today, there is still a higher ratio of men working in the industry. And that's always been kind of disappointing to me. And just by listening to me, you can probably tell I'm a feminist. And one of the problems I have being a feminist is that I always have to say I'm a feminist, but insert the disclaimer of your choice here. And let me explain this in a bit more detail, because I'm sure many of you probably don't know where I'm going to be heading with this. And it's nothing bad. It's just, you know, how things have evolved. And that is the bad thing. Feminists have been getting a bad rap for a very, very long time due to extremists within the movement. And these extremists are those who believe that, you know, all men are bad, that they are the root of all evil, that, you know, women should be the dominant sex, blah, 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 blah. Again, insert anything along those lines here. And I'm sure you've heard these arguments. Politician Rush Limbaugh even dubbed these types of women feminazis. And not only is that term insulting, it is also a very poor choice of words, considering that it associates all feminists with the Nazi Party. I don't need to go into much detail about the atrocities committed by the followers of Adolf Hitler and his Nazi regime. But as you know, it is one of the darkest periods in human history. And as the result of these extreme behaviors, with the end result being these actions here. The Holocaust, Kristallnacht, D-Day, Pearl Harbor, the Battle of Stalingrad. And the whole big mess ended with two atomic bombs, Fat Man and Little Boy, exploding and annihilating the cities of Nagasaki and Hiroshima, which then led to the Cold War and a whole other slew of problems. My point being is that I don't see any feminist causing the mass extermination of millions and millions of people. I know that when Rush Limbaugh used the term feminazi, he was talking about the extremist behaviors of these women and comparing them to the extremist behaviors of the Nazis. But what I hate, especially in the internet age, is anyone who does any sort of extremist behavior on the internet or tries to censor free speech or ridicule someone, it's automatically compared to the Nazi Party. So in effect, the term Nazi has lost its meaning while at the same time radicalized into a whole new meaning to which the actual meaning has been lost. At the same time, it remains. And that has transpired to where modern feminists always have to say, I'm a feminist, but. So I think the proper term, what we should probably use to call these women who are a bit more, you know, down with all men, which is not something I want, is to call them as hyper-feminists, because that's what they are. They're hyper in their emotions when it comes to their beliefs, which are extreme, but not as extreme as that of the Nazis. Going forward, this means a lot of women who are really feminists don't really identify as feminists because of this really negative connotation. But let me say that the true definition of feminism is that you desire fair and equal treatment for all women, regardless of age, religious, or ethnic background. The biggest point of this being is if you want to have a career or some sort of lifestyle that has been traditionally held by a man, then you have the right and the opportunity to pursue it. At the same time, if, however, you are a woman and you choose, I'm emphasizing this here, to live a more traditional life, where you stay at home and become a homemaker, you know, a really cool family-oriented mom, then that is awesome too. Because both types of women are feminists. But the idea that has really generated into the media is that you're not a feminist if you decide to stay at home and be a mom. You can only be a feminist if you fit this really extremist cookie-cutter mold that, in real reality, does not exist. I've only seen a few extremist people who fit the term hyperfeminist. So as you can see, that was a very long disclaimer there. But I had to say it at some point throughout the Ladies of Animation Month so that people wouldn't get the wrong idea about what I'm trying to do. The Ladies of Animation Month is a thought I had a couple years ago where because of the less women I was seeing on my show who worked in the industry, I wanted to use my platform as a podcast host to push women and girls over their hump of their hesitancy if they had the hankering to work in the animation industry or even any other field that is traditionally male-dominated, because there is such a high proportion of women and girls who really want to do something but don't because they don't believe they can do it or they are told they are not do it. And I think that is one of the greatest disabilities in our modern era, is more than half of the population is being held back by someone saying they can't do it or by their own lack of self-confidence, when in all actuality, not only do they have the capability, but they more than likely have a great talent at whatever it could be, especially in animation. One of my greatest wish, not only for animation, but for society as a whole, for the whole great world, is to the point where the battle of the genders, the battle of the sexes, is so, or it becomes so old-fashioned, so outdated, that when you come up with the idea, oh, is that a boy or a girl, it doesn't really register much. It just becomes, oh, okay, so this person's a boy or girl. So what? What are their talents? What are their capabilities? I want gender issues to become obsolete. I have been planning a Ladies in Animation Month ever since I started the podcast with the Fanboy Nation Network. And I have been scouring my connections and networks to find women who work in the animation industry. And of course, there are a lot of lovely voice actresses, and there are a lot of female animators, but it's a lot harder than you might think to get some of these people on the show. But while I was hanging out on Facebook one day, a great organization that I never knew existed called Women in Animation popped up. And I was like, oh, this fits the theme of my show. And I did a little research on it. And I contacted their board and PR person. I said, hey, this is what I'm doing. I would love to, you know, put a spotlight on your organization, maybe interview one or two of your board members, time willingly. And some of the people who I'm going to give a very fantastic shout out to, Fumi Kitahara and Tracy Miller Zarnek, I owe you my undying gratitude. Because of these two women, not only was I able to get a few board members, but I was able to get some pretty wonderful women who I've admired for years on the show. I mean, these women are so cool that when they told me that they wanted to talk to me, that my head literally blew up. I mean, I'm still trying to find the fragments of my skull in mind. I got a message from New Zealand the other day saying that part of my, you know, hippocampus was, you know, washed up on a beach there, and some guy's gonna FedEx to me. And thank goodness I was alone in my room, because I had one of the biggest geeking out moments in my entire life. And had it been in public, I'm sure it would have gone viral and probably really embarrassed me to this day. But hey, I'm a geek. I have no shame about that. And I admire who I admire. And it just so happens that a lot of the women in animation who I admire happen to be associated and aligned with the Women of Animation's message. And once they heard what I was trying to do with my podcast, they were willing to speak with me. So I am going to keep who they are and what they do a secret until each interview, because I want to send all of you in the same spiraling moment of geekiness that I experienced when I heard that these women wanted to talk with me. But before I get into today's guest, let me send once more a big gratitude of thank yous to Fumi Kitahara and Tracy Miller Zarnek. Without your help, the Ladies of Animation of 2015 would not be what it is. So if you kind of have the same feeling towards women in animation that I have just expressed in my preface to the Ladies of Animation Month, you might want to consider joining the Women in Animation organization. It's a fantastic group based out in California. Their entire goal is to promote, educate, spread the word, you know, do anything to inspire girls and women to pursue their animated dreams. And their biggest goal, as I will discuss with today's awesome guest, is they want a full 50-50 women in the animation industry by 2025. So within 10 years, the women an animation goal is to see that there is an entire equal shift of women in the animation industry, rather being, you know, discombobulated as it is now. So, the first guest for 2015's official Ladies of Animation Month on the Tune In Talk podcast is none other than Margaret Dean, who has her friends call her Marge. And if you are anything like me, you read the credits to your favorite cartoons, be they on television or in the movie theater, or some of those direct-to-DVD specials, or direct-to-digital download these days. Anyway, Marge Dean has a fantastic career in filmography. Why? Well, she not only is one of the co-presidents of the Women in Animation, but she is also the former director of production at Mattel's, Playground Productions. So she was helped responsible for creating some of those, movies based on toy lines, like, the Barbie movies, the Monster High, Ever After High, Hot Wheels, shows like that. And she was also the executive producer on a bunch of those Scooby-Doo movies that came out in the early 2000s. And she has worked on a whole bunch of other really cool projects. But right now, oh, wow, I'm kind of just amazed. And, I mean, my mind is kind of blown just by telling you this. But she is currently the general manager at Stupid Buddy Studios, which is a company that Seth Green is associated with, the guy who makes Robot Chicken. And she's basically heading up the entire back end of that studio. So she's helping all those creative guys from that company get more work, keeping the flow going. I mean, it's just so amazing what she is doing over at Stupid Buddy and what she has accomplished in her own career, not just because she is a woman, but just because she is who she is. And not to mention, she's also extremely nice. We have similar taste in pets, apparently, and movies. So I am getting excited just talking about the interview. And rather than me talk about the interview, why don't you listen to it? And so, without further ado, here is the interview with Miss Marge Dean.
My name is Marge Dean. I have been working in animation for over 20 years. Currently, I am the general manager of Stupid Buddy Studios. Mm-hmm. And so right as I was graduating, he became the producer and hired me on as a, basically as a receptionist, but I was a terrible receptionist. I was much better as a PA, and then I became a production coordinator. And within about 18 months, I became the production manager of the Ren and Stimpy show. And I'm proud to say that I'm, as far as I know, the only production manager on Ren and Stimpy that delivered a show on time. So,
wow.
It was an amazing learning experience. I feel like I was thrown in the deep end of a pool, and there was such unbelievable talent connected with that show that I really got to learn from the best, of what is good animation and how to produce it and all that kind of stuff. So so that was my start, and then it led from one job to another to another.
Yeah, and you were working at Mattel for a while. You were responsible for Playground Productions. For how many years was that?
I worked at Mattel for 3 years. And my role was like head of production. I was the person in charge of production. I wouldn't say I was in charge of the whole group. That was David Voss, who was the sort of our leader, our peerless leader. And but I worked for him and kept all those trains running.
So you were responsible for the Barbie movies? And what other lines did you work on?
I worked on all the projects because, my job was to, like I said, keep the trains running, make sure that all the productions kept going. So I worked on the Barbie movies. I worked on Monster High, Ever After High, Max Steel, Hot Wheels. I know I'm forgetting something, but it was quite a lot of work. And last year we produced over 1,500 minutes of content.
So. Yeah, and I'll have to admit, the Barbie movies and the Monster High movies, well, my niece and I enjoy watching them together. When she's not around, they are my own guilty pleasure. 'Cause, I mean, I think for being based off a toy line, while there are some high and low points for any sort of branded industry, overall, I think they're really good content.
Well, thank you. That's nice to hear. We work pretty hard to, although restricted differently than other producers of content, in that we do have to stay true to a brand, and we have to stay true to the goals and objective of the content, which is to stimulate play, which therefore stimulates the sale of toys. That puts certain limitations on what you can do. But even with all of that, I feel like our creative team did some really great work. It's an extra challenge, but they really totally stepped up.
Yeah, and what I always find, of course, since it's a brand that is working to sell a toy, I always giggle to myself whenever I saw the characters in Meet the Monster High or the Ever After or the Barbies, all of a sudden their outfit magically changes. And I'm like, they're right. Trying to sell a doll right there. It's a limited edition release.
Yep. No, absolutely. And there's no shame in that. Anyone who's doing kids content, it's very hard to be in kids content for the long term without a toy license. The cost of production and the support that has to go, the financial support that has to go into making the content, is no longer subsidized by license. Like if you sell it to a network, it no longer pays for the cost of production. So you have to have these ancillary rights in place. And so a toy license is the key. It's the golden ticket for anyone who's creating content. So at Mattel, the beauty is that you start with the toy license.
Yeah, and unlike some other toy products who shall remain nameless, you had an intelligent series in some of these lines rather than just saying, rather than it being a 60-minute long commercial. I mean, there was lessons and there was good stuff along with the selling of the merchandise is what I'm trying to get at.
Mattel has been, I feel safe to say, has been the first and foremost in creating content for girls. During the whole period of time when people said girls are not interested in animation, girls don't watch animation, and networks were all driven by boy content, you could not get anything on the air that would be a story for girls or about girls. And Mattel didn't believe that because it was very committed to its girl toy line. And I think we're very successful in making this content. And part of that is they're very committed to, they're very committed to girl empowerment. And, they got a lot of feedback from moms and daughters about where some of the content had been, and that, the values are starting to shift and people are much more interested in having their girls see content that does them good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, has a good moral, has a good principle. And Mattel has always been there. It's always been, they have what they call a universal truth for each line. And it's always a very positive pro-girl position.
Yeah, and I've been seeing that. I've been following Mattel-based cartoons for over 10 years, and I can say the quality has improved when it comes to the Monster High and the Ever After High. I'm a very big fan of the Ever After High storyline that you have out there, and Monster High, I enjoy those as well. So that coming from someone in her 20s, I think, and plus I know some of the voice actors on the show, so they're entertaining and they're good. So
thank you.
You're welcome. And now you are at Stupid Monkey or Stupid Brothers?
It's Stupid Buddy.
Stupid Buddy.
Yeah.
And that is Seth Green's animation studio, isn't it?
There are four owners.
Wow.
So there's Seth and Matt and Towner and Harv. So Eric Towner, John Harventeen, and Matt. I cannot pronounce Matt's last name. It's like Senreich. I think it's Senreich, something like that. You could look it up. So they, Matt and Seth had created Robot Chicken. They were Stupid Monkey. And then Towner and Harv had their own stop-motion studio, which they called Buddy Systems. So they merged a few years ago to create Stupid Buddy. And they're now, you know, going crazy like gangbusters. They have over 200 employees and just have a tremendous amount of work in there. A big piece of which is, and still the jewel, the crown jewel of the company is Robot Chicken.
Yeah, wow. That must be a very drastic change where you're making really innocent cartoons with a positive message to, you know, a more mature content where they're cussing and basically anything is open, well, more or less open range for the topic. Wow.
Yeah. Yes, it is. And I have to say, you know, I love doing kids' content. I've done kids' content for most of my experience. But as a fan, I also like the sort of older skewing animation. I've always been a problem for me that in the U.S. especially, people think animation is only for kids, which it's not. You know, especially with your generation and, you know, the generations that grown up on animation, your taste has evolved and grown up. And so there needs to be animation for the, you know, older folks.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Most of the animation I consume is considered for children because that's the majority of what's out there. But there's only so many times I can watch, you know, Monster High or Barbie movies because I want something that is, I mean, I'm educated, and I mean, I have a master's degree, so I like something that stimulates my intellectual curiosity as well, which is why I like watching, you know, something like Archer or even South Park, because as lewd as those shows can be, they're very intelligently written.
Right, exactly, and pretty funny.
I know, yeah. I mean, what I love about those shows is I don't know what to expect. And same with Robot Chicken. Anything is game on that show.
Exactly.
So what will you be doing for Stupid Brothers?
Stupid Buddy?
Stupid Buddy, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I am the general manager. So the guys have brought me in. They've been so – the studio has gotten pretty large. It's probably at least doubled in size, if not more than that. And they're creative guys, and too much of their time is being spent running the studio. So they brought me in to do that for them.
Okay. What is involved with running a studio that size?
It's right now it's putting in procedures and you know strengthening the pipeline to make it more probably more efficient as well as what am I trying to think of? Like, I mean, if you think about the difference between making, you know, a thing one at a time versus making things five at a time. You know, you have to start putting some systems in place to keep that workflow moving and keeping everybody in sync with each other and that kind of thing. So that's sort of the bigger picture of what I'm supposed to be doing is helping them figure out what that is and how things would work further. So I deal with things like the production and overseeing production, but I'm also, you know, there's a lot, especially in a stop motion studio, it's just a lot of stuff, you know, objects and things you have to buy. And so operations, you know, the actual physical space. And with 200 people, you have to take care of 200 people. So you have to make sure everybody's got computers and that they're all working and that they have enough, you know, water and soda and coffee available to them. And there's toilet paper in the bathroom and, you know, all of that sort of mundane stuff that just keeps everybody, you know, working. I'm also very involved in the financial aspect of it and cost reporting and budgeting. And I will be working with them to think about how to grow the business. Their background is primarily in stop motion. mine is primarily in 2D and 3D animation. So we are expanding our the kind of work that we do to include 2D and 3D. So it's another part of my job would be to go out and do business development, basically go out and get more work for the studio, because we do a combination of work for hire for other people as well as create original content.
Wow.
And then finally, helping them with development, organizing development, which is related to business development, figuring out distribution and all this kind of stuff. It's very exciting. I'm really, really happy about the move and what I have in front of, and they're great guys.
Yeah, I met Seth at the New York Comic Con last year, and I visited his panel on stop motion, how they were starting a school or an online tutorial where he was going to teach people how to do their own stop motion.
Right.
Yeah, yep. And I just listening to him, I mean, I've always seen him on TV. He's always on when I see him on TV, so he's very, but when you see him in person, you can just hear his love for the medium, and he's a little bit calmer than I would say he is on TV interviews, and I like listening to his enthusiasm, because it's the same type I feel whenever I see a new Pixar movie or a new Miyazaki movie come out, and or just a stop motion Robot Chicken come on, and it's really exciting that you get to be part of the pipeline in that. And I'm also very happy that you're going to be involved a bit in the tracking down work for these people, because with your background, wow, I can just imagine what's going to happen.
Well, we're working on it. Hopefully we'll. I mean, the one thing about these guys, and it's what I love about them, they're total nerds. They truly are passionate about, they're passionate about animation, but also all the sort of extensions of animation. They're passionate about toys. They're passionate about comics and, all that nerdy stuff. And they know so much about it. It's like amazing to sit in a room with them and listen to them talk about it. It's great. So one of the things that I like about, I've worked for several studios, both large studios and small studios, and the biggest challenge in every place I've worked is to get the right talent in, and especially to have the right talent in leadership. And I feel like I just walked into it. I mean, these guys are so amazingly talented, and I get to work with them. So it's mm-hmm. pretty cool.
Now, can you give us a little bit of details of possible future projects if you're allowed to? If not, then I totally understand.
Yeah, I really can't. Sorry.
Story of my life.
Yeah, no, it's very, especially if, in the work for hire that we do, it's somebody else's property. So we can't, it's up to them to figure out the timing of their marketing and mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah. Oh, well, all I can do is wait and read about it on the forum or on my newsfeed. So that's one of the things about being a podcast is when I talk to people, it's like, you guys know, and I know you guys are excited and I'm excited, but they're like, no, we can't talk about it. And I go, darn. But
right.
That is the waiting game. And that is something I'm very good at. So
cool.
Now you have been in animation for over 20 years. We're starting out in what is becoming known as the golden age of Nickelodeon, and have ridden the waves through the lull in the early 2000s, and now it's picking up again. What are some observations you have seen about women working in the industry? Has it increased, decreased? What do you think?
Well, it's really interesting, actually. I am co-president of Women in Animation, which mm-hmm. is a nonprofit organization, advocacy organization, which our primary goal is to get more women into creative leadership roles. And we did some statistics, and looking back at the percentage of women involvement in those creative roles. I mean, in Los Angeles, we're fortunate to have actually animation, most of the animation business is unionized. So there is a group of people who are actually tracking people's employment. So it was easy for us to get some statistics. And I would say, well, and so what we found was that the statistics are, you know, obviously very low, as, you know, no surprise to that. But the really interesting part was we also then went out to schools because we, excuse me, we started hearing from different schools, in particular CalArts, about the huge influx of females in their student body. And this last year, CalArts said they'd hit the 70% mark. 70% of their student body in the animation program are female.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty astounding. And so we started looking back, like, at what point did we change? Did that change? Because we had heard lots of stories about women, you know, women who are like directors and, you know, been around for a while in animation. So we're maybe in school 10 years ago, or 10 or 15 years ago, where like, I was the only one in my class. And so it seems like, you know, I don't know, I haven't pinpointed the exact year, but it seems like somewhere around 2005, 2006, the numbers started to climb. More and more women started to go to school. I think it all ties with the, you know, increase, like you were talking about, the golden years of Nickelodeon. I mean, I think those young women like yourself who had grown up with lots of animation, with several animation-only networks, got the bug. And so they started going to school. So somewhere around 2005, 2006, the numbers really started to climb. And we looked at 2010 and not just CalArts, but across the board at several different schools, you know, around the country. And, they're all over 50%. More than 50% of the student body of animation programs are female. And yet when they come out, when you look at the jobs, women are only getting like maybe in 2012, it was 18% of the job in creative leads. You know, so we're talking about storyboard artists, directors, designers, art directors, animators, those kind of people. And even now, from 2006 to 2015, it's only gone from 18% to 20%. And, you know, so a lot of people are like, are, you know, assume naturally or logically that, oh, there's this many women studying in school, that's going to change everything. Like, we're going to start seeing this big influx. There will be more women. And what we're seeing is it doesn't change at the rate that the enrollment in school has changed. It's only gone up, like, you know, 3 or 4%.
Yeah.
Even though there's so many people, so many women coming out of school. So that's the big disconnect that women in animation is addressing. Like, we want to both look at the industry and how people are hired and how they're treated in school and how they're treated in the workplace, but also, and more importantly, start working with women. And what is it about them that, you know, that they either don't have the confidence to step up? Because to take on leadership in any form, but especially creative leadership, you have to be very bold, and you have to either have a lot of self-confidence or pretend you have a lot of self-confidence, because you're putting yourself out there, right, for people to judge. And, you know, what I've noticed in myself as well as anyone else is, you know, women sometimes, you know, are very sensitive, and, it, you know, that's a very scary thing to do. So we want, we're starting to develop, and people are not giving women the tools. I mean, that's the sort of bottom line. They're not giving them the tools to be able to step up into these leadership roles. So that's what Women in Animation is about. We're trying to both empower women to become leaders, as well as to start shedding a light on the situation and trying to get people, you know, the industry itself to rethink how they go about hiring people, make that little extra effort to find some talented women, you know, and actually, you know, for us, it's all about general diversity. We're focused on women, but if we started talking about people in of color or other groups of people, you know, it's a very similar scenario. So our hope is to open the door for lots of people.
Yeah, one of the things I've noticed, and I've noticed it in myself even, is that whenever I voice an opinion or ask a question about something, and I've had to teach myself not to do this, is I go, excuse me for interrupting, or I'm sorry
exactly.
for mentioning this. And
yep.
one of the things that I have learned ever since I started, doing this podcast about 2 years ago, is not to doubt my voice.
Exactly. It came clear to me that exact habit that women have. I was in a meeting, and it was like a brainstorm. So it's a place where you're supposed to express your opinion. I mean, that was the whole point of the gathering. And there was one guy who was there. He's the only guy on this team. The rest are all female. And he's the creative lead on the project. Mm-hmm. And so we were talking about different things here and there, and then he had to go do something. And as soon as he left, I mean, I realized the start of everybody's sentence was, I'm sorry, but I think this. And then somebody else would go, oh, but I'm sorry, I think that. And then somebody else would go, I'm sorry, oh, please, excuse me, I'm sorry, but I think this. And I finally... I lost my temper. I mean, I didn't get really seriously angry, but I just was like, I hit the table and I said, you guys, the guy is gone, all right? Like, whatever that is gone. It's just us. Please stop apologizing for having an opinion. And then, of course, they would start talking and somebody, because it's a habit, they would start to say it and then they go, oh, sorry, Marge. And I would go, stop apologizing. Just say what you think, you know. It was actually really interesting. And I think by the end of the day, people, it had altered a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of the things that I have a pet peeve of about the 1980s, as much as I love that time, is that all the girl characters, I mean, most of them, their occupation was being a princess, but they did stuff, but then they didn't do stuff. And what I want is I want to see women in animation working on heroines that are having just as many adventures as the male characters.
Well, I think you'll see, I think we're seeing that happening.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I mean, there's a number of shows now, and I think it's happening largely because women are starting to create shows. And, I wouldn't say women in animation organizations can take full credit, but I think we are having some influence on that. But also it's the time, people are very, culturally, everyone is very sensitive to women's issues and the position of women. I mean, if you're online following stuff, you'll see that. I mean, almost every day there's some article about the status of women in engineering, the status of women in medicine, the status of women in entertainment. It's the hot topic right now, which is awesome. And as I talk a lot with my colleagues in women in animation, is like, we have got to totally ride this wave. Like, we have got to get as much land, cover as much ground as possible while, everybody's paying attention as we can. So I think you're seeing that there are more and more shows. I mean, look at Star versus Evil.
Yeah.
On Disney and even Steven Universe. And, there's a number of shows created by women. And I know, even though I've heard, let's just say, because I'm not at Nickelodeon right now, but, I've heard that they have at least one, if not a couple of shows coming out created by women. We have and I'm just going to start calling it WEA because that's our short term for it. At WEA, we actually have been building an alliance with the Gina Davis Institute. And you're probably familiar with her institute, which is they study characters, female characters, and how many are there. And do a lot of, their focus has been more on the content, whereas our focus is primarily on the people making the content.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nice, symbiotic relationship, because I think it goes both ways. I mean, I think if we can get more women in the driver's seat, then we will find, you will start finding that these characters will start to come out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good. I think you'll see, I think change is coming. I think it's already here, but I think we're going to see a big change. There's also a, I want to say a politicizing of fathers. And it's really heartwarming and amazing to see. But I think somehow this generation of dads, of daughters, really understand and want the most for their daughters. I heard a very moving thing on the radio. It was a long time ago, but it was like on NPR or something. And it was a reporter who was describing the birth of his daughter and, you know, how exciting and terrifying. And, you know, and it was a very riveting description of it. But the part that, you know, just really broke my heart or, you know, brought a lot of emotion up for me was he said, and then I looked at her, there she was. And we had just gone through all this and there she was. And I realized that there were people who were going to tell her there were things she couldn't do. And and he said, you know, that I am determined from that point on, I decided that will never happen to my daughter. And I think men across the world are realizing that. Like if you look at, I'm going to totally mispronounce her name because I don't speak well, but Amala, the woman from Pakistan who was, almost killed because she wanted to have an education.
Yeah.
And she's able to do what she does because her father completely supports her. You know, like he's with her, he travels with her, he speaks for her. He did a TED talk about what is it like to be the father of this amazing young woman. And I think that's going to get us all so far, you know. But anyway, I think it's going to lead to a lot of change because dads are like, I want more for my daughters.
Yeah, and what I want to achieve, I mean, one of the reasons why I hold Ladies of Animation month is that I wanted to get to the point where we no longer have to talk about it, to where it's so commonplace that, oh, a woman director, okay, well, what's the story about? Where
right.
That is more important than the fact that it's a woman who's making it. Not, I'm not trying to downgrade or, you know.
No, I totally understand. I've often said I want our organization to become obsolete.
Yeah.
I want us to do such a good job that, we're not needed anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our goal. We want it. We don't see this as a forever organization at all. We actually have a call to action, which I think would mark the end of, I mean, there probably would be other things that we would keep doing, but really this drive is we want 50-50 by 2025. That's our goal.
Wow.
It's an ambitious goal, but we're all very determined to do it.
Well, and you know, I remember this is kind of similar, but there was an author named James Baldwin. He was an African-American.
Sure.
And he wasn't confirmed gay, but more all the evidence really points to that. And he was brought to Washington, and people were asking him, well, what's going on with the, you know, African-American empowerment movement? The guy's like, I don't really know. But he had a conversation with someone where 60, 70 years from now, we're going to have, you know, a black president. And he was kind of scoffed at, but
now
we have a mixed president, half white, half African, or half. He's a dude of African descent, so, yeah, we're there.
Yeah, so. No, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very encouraging to me just to see that things can change. And I think that's it's really an important thing to remember, that we can have impact and we can make things change.
Yeah, and the good thing is when if you're wanting to change and the times are changing, and that you have that ambition or that drive to do it, and the times reflect it, it's just amazing what can happen.
Exactly. I mean, I do think that as somebody who's been around for a while, you know, I mean, I was a feminist when I was 18. And at that time, it was, I wouldn't say it was popular, but it was certainly acceptable. And I, you know, I studied a lot and, you know, really grew into that role. And then somewhere probably around the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, it started becoming unpopular.
Yeah.
And in fact, it got to the point where, you know, it was a bad word, feminist. And, you know, so I never changed my beliefs or how I acted or, you know, what I spoke about, but I was no longer saying I'm a feminist out loud. I mean, I would say it to my personal friends, but, you know, I just got to the point where I basically went underground, and I'm very excited right now, especially when I started doing the women in animation, because I feel like I can come out, you know, I can come out as a feminist, and it's okay. And in fact, it's once again a positive thing.
Yeah. And I think there's two types of feminists. There are those crazy hyper feminists who are, you know, man haters and who are like saying that all men are chauvinists, which is totally, I don't, the opposite of what I think the average feminist is, who just wants to, you know, equal treatment, equal rights, and just to the point where we don't have to have this gender sex game anymore.
Right. I mean, first of all, two things. One is, I don't actually believe there are very many women like that anymore. I think that was a very small group of people back in the 70s. Mm-hmm. But they gave feminism such a bad name, and it was the thing that the anti-feminist people could latch onto and exploit and use against, you know, the positive aspect of, you know, the philosophy and the ideas and the movement. And so I bet, I mean, we don't have to actually have a real conversation. So this is almost a rhetorical challenge. I would really challenge you to think about, who do you know that's actually like that? I don't actually think there are that many. And I kind of wish people would just stop talking about them, you know, because they're not real. They're like a figment of somebody's imagination, maybe one in a million or something like
that.
The other thing is, the other thing is what I, you know, in pulling together to relaunch Women in Animation, you know, we spent a lot of time, a group of us, you know, the board, talking about what our goals are, what our aims are, and, you know, what's our mission statement and all this kind of stuff. And I was very happy where we ended up, which is, you know, for us, it is about equal rights and it is about equal pay, but the idea, because that's fair, but, but really our goal is to get that female voice out there, because we think the world will be a better place with that, with more, diversity, like a more diversified voice out there talking about their experience and what the world is like and how they see the world, is just going to make it a better place for everybody. You know, men, women, people of color, children, everybody will benefit if women would. I mean, we're a huge untapped resource. I don't think the world even really knows how much impact and how things will change for the good if women had more of a voice than they do right now.
And I agree with that. I think of it as, like you just, we are an untapped resource. And the thing is, it's men and women exist together on this world. And it should be about teamwork and partnership and just working together to make this place a better world for ourselves and future generations.
Yep, I agree.
Well, on that note, let me ask you the one question I ask of all my interviewees when we get to the end of an interview. Are you ready for it?
Yep.
Okay. Do you, Miss Marge Dean, have anything to declare?
To declare?
To declare.
Wow. I suppose I should start. I declare. I don't know. I'm totally drawing a blank. I have no idea. There's like so many places I could go with that. I declare that my dog Olive is the cutest dog in the universe.
Oh, you have dogs?
Well, actually, technically, she's my grand dog. My daughter's sitting right here with me, going, "She's not your dog." But she lives with me, so I feel very attached to her. But
what kind of dog?
Cutest dog in the world. She's what they call a Chiweenie.
I have two Chiweenies.
Really?
Yeah, they're brothers.
They're the cutest. Wow.
Yeah, their names are Sunny and Vito, and they're the life of my life.
I can tell you and I are going to be friends for a long time. The Godfather is like my favorite movie of all time.
Oh, you get it? Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, yeah, totally got it. Yes.
Welcome to the Bottom of the Tune and Talk podcast and the first interview in 2015's Ladies of Animation Month with Miss Marge Dean. Now, after listening to that interview, didn't you not only find it informative, but also inspiring and perhaps a little bit pushing you towards pursuing your own dreams in the animation industry? I hope so. And if you are still on the edge of your own hesitancy hump, then we have a whole lot more people to help persuade you to jump off and head straight first into the career of your dreams. Yeah, maybe I should take my own advice and pursue my own dream of becoming a world-famous voice actress. As soon as I finish writing my book on the first female animation director, Lotte Reiniger, these things don't write themselves. But not ironically, I am in the portion of the book where I am talking about feminism in the animation industry and comparing it to Lotte Reiniger. And that is a doozy of an essay. And if you are interested in reading it, you should check out my book when it is published sometime in 2016 or 2017. Publication dates still pending. Miss Marge Dean, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. A bazillion thank yous for coming on to the Tune and Talk podcast. I hope I can have you on again as a guest in the future. And I am holding stand and strong to that declaration and goal of 50-50 by 2025. And you know what? It's just possible and probable that it will be done. And now we move forward on to another segment of the show called the Tune and Talk Housekeeping Hour. No, it's just the Tune and Talk Housekeeping Minute or Two. So, as you notice, I took a small hiatus in the middle of October, and this was mostly due to the New York Comic Con. I went to the New York Comic Con, and it was fantastic. I will be writing a trip report up with that. I went up to New York for several reasons, one of which was to attend the Comic-Con and promote the show and network to get some more guests. I had the privilege to meet Kevin Conroy, who, you know, is Batman, the Batman. I don't care who else you say. The only Batman I know is Kevin Conroy. But I also met Rebecca Sugar, a creator of Steven Universe, and not only is she a very lovely person, but she is a very creative, soft-spoken individual. And she creates very good metaphors based on observations. And I'll detail that a bit once I get time to sit down and write. But I also went up to New York to do some research for my book on Lotte Reiniger at Columbia University and the Museum of Modern Art. Frankly, I just think it's cool to be able to say I did research at Columbia University Museum of Modern Art, because I've never done research at those types of places. Most of the time, I've just hung out in archives or on a digital database somewhere. And it was quite an experience. I worked in archives all throughout college, and a part of my educational background is a specialization in archives, but, you know, it's completely different when you're processing the records versus actually using them for research. And all I can say is I am a big proponent of people, you know, giving more money to digitize all records. That way you can use a search function and you don't have to use and listen to outdated technology. And also then you also get, you know, digital scans of images. That's a little tirade there that won't go any further. But also I went to the New York Comic Con because it's a great place to meet publishers of graphic novels and comic books. And if you are in the convention scene at all, you know that a lot of the smaller conventions do not have as big as a comic book presence as they used to. I mean, the big ones, of course, like Emerald City Comic Con, San Diego Comic Con, and of course New York Comic Con, you're going to get a lot more comic people because those are, again, big conventions. And New York is one of the publishing capitals in the U.S., and I had, another privilege of meeting with about 5 to 7 potential publishers, and I'm not going to say who, and I'm not going to say what. I think a few of them showed interest in my young adult graphic novel, Blood, Feather, and Stone. And, you know, readers, listeners, send a good thought my way, and perhaps someone will pick up this book of mine. It's a project I've been working on for 2-3 years. I have a great artist, and it's something that encourages it. And one of the reasons why I'm even talking about this with you is because it fulfills the same message of, you know, wanting to encourage more girls to be active and assertive in their own lives and not listening to people who can't tell them what they can or cannot do. And one of the reasons why I wrote this book, Blood, Feather, and Stone, was to create a heroine that I myself would have liked to have read growing up, and I'm sure other girls would as well. And so again, wish me luck and hope that one of these really, really good publishers picks me up, because if they do, it would not only have been fantastic, but it would give me the opportunity to write more in this general theme, this general idea, because it's one of the reasons why I write. And also because I have a lot of stories in my imagination. If they don't come out, they have threatened to eat me alive. And, you know, even though I am their creator, it's kind of, yeah. My imagination can be a scary place sometimes, but it's also a nice, wonderful, happy place. And I want to share my stories with the world. So, as you know, another bit of housekeeping is that I opened up an Amazon store. The entire inventory of my new Tune and Talk podcast store is related to animation. Not only do I have a lot of books on the history of animation, many of which I am also using from my own book on Lotta Reiniger and the history about the early days of animation, but I also have a lot of really high-rated animation equipment, you know, a lot of software programs such as, you know, Cintiq and Adobe Photoshop, and there are a bunch of other really cool goodies on there. The link is available at tuneintalk.com, and just click on store. And also, you can find the link in the show notes, but also if you have any other shopping you need to do this holiday season related to Amazon or any other thing, you might want to go to our affiliate link, which is www.tuneintalk.com/Amazon, and that will take you to our Amazon affiliate link, and it's a really great way to get your holiday shopping done. So, I also have some other affiliate marketing things I'm working on going on in the future. But as you know, that stuff can take some time and a little bit of planning. And right now, all my planning is writing essays about, you know, animation in the early days. So, if you are interested in more information about Margaret Dean or the Women in Animation organization, I will put those links in the show notes. However, if you are also interested in connecting with me, your host, Whitney Grace, you can connect with me in a number of ways. Please send me an email about your reviews, comments, and potential guests you'd like to see on the show to tuneintalk@gmail.com, or you can connect with me at Twitter. My personal handle is @StorySequence, or you can connect directly with the show at tuneintalk. And as always, if you are interested in reading the latest news when it comes to all things geekiness and, you know, as they say, fanboy or fangirlness, you might want to check out fanboynation.com. I have a really, really good, bump to put in there, but I'm just gonna, make my own. So, without further ado, I think that brings us to the end of another episode of the Tune In Talk podcast. This month, the ladies in animation. So, if you excuse me, I am going to have a animation female marathon. I am going to watch The Adventures of Prince Ahmed by Lotta Reiniger. I am going to watch Brave, directed by Brenda Chapman. And I'm also going to watch Shrek by Vicky Jensen. And I'm just going to have a bunch of all powerful movies in there directed by some female directors. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. So I will catch you in episode 22, folks, and see you then.